And that was Richie Havens. Ear Buddies goes out with Freedom by Richie Havens. Now, there you go. The theme of your show was freedom, obviously, right?
Songs with the word freedom.
Songs with the word freedom, yeah. So I saw Richie Havens at Passim in Cambridge back in, I don't know when that was. I can't even predict when that was. 80s, had to be the 80s, I guess. Why would Eject be locked on that? That's odd, isn't it? Huh. What do we have to do? Maybe turn it off? Let's see. Okay, we'll do that. Well, it's already off. Sorry. Sorry for the technical difficulties here. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WMFO in Medford. That's WMFO Medford. Also known as Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio at 91.5 FM over the air and at WMFO.org over the computer and interweb nets. WMFO.org if you want to listen by your computer. And today we're switching up a little bit from music with Ear Buddies to talking music with Socialist Radio, talking music from a working class socialist perspective. And if you're a regular listener, you know we're changing our name a little bit here. We still have to get the management at the station here to change the schedule or whatever we have to do about that. We're not sure. But yeah, we used to be known as Socialist Alternative Radio. Now we're Socialist Radio, and it's been good. It's been good. Today, International Women's Day. We're going to talk a lot about that. I don't hear much. I didn't hear much in the corporate media. Did you hear anything at all? Did you hear anything in the corporate media? So International Women's Day is getting ignored.
Russia Today had its own thing on that.
Hold on, Diego. I don't hear you very well. Are you?
I'm not on.
Mic 4?
Hello?
You are on. You are on, actually.
No, that's Hello? 3.
So try that again.
Hello, mic check.
Can you turn it up, maybe? That may be the problem.
Hello?
No.
Hello? Hello?
Any suggestions on that? Try one more time.
Hello?
It is on, then. If
okay.
Oh, you are on. I'm sorry. According to this, you're on.
Yeah.
Can we go out in the... Can I just run out in the hall for a second and see if you're on? Just say some things.
I check. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Mic check. Hello? Is it okay?
Alright,
so, yeah? Okay, I guess it's just my
earphones. Well, actually, you're coming over the air on our studio monitor a little low, so if you could, I don't know, there's no other mic you can use, you gotta use 4. Yeah, and if you could just speak up a little, I guess, would be the thing to do. Try again.
All right. Yeah, okay.
See, watch this when you go, when you speak.
Yep, mic check.
See how low it is?
Yeah, it's very low.
So here's me. You go. Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Yeah, so it's low.
All right.
I don't know what to do about that.
It's all right.
Just speak louder when you speak, I guess. I'm sorry about that. That's about the best we can do right now. Let me push your mic up a little bit. Now try it.
Mic check.
That doesn't help. That doesn't help, really.
No?
No. Any ideas?
Turn up mic.
Actually, why don't we throw on a CD and not bore everyone with our technical difficulties? This is Rye Cooter. We're going to put on the air here in a second. With let's get the gentrification song on there, number 3.
Standing on a corner,
finding my time. Not of a job, not earning a dime. Lady steps up, says, I suppose you're a stylish young man by the looks of your clothes. She said, trust me and take a little tip. This building's been sold to Johnny Depp. Who? Take the bow, relocate. The Google men are coming downtown, so don't be late. See, this is my apartment. Just a hole in the wall. Got to sleep in the kitchen with your feet in the hall. No hot water, no windows and doors. You gotta make it past all the real estate agents, junkies and hoes. Heart of the city, ain't no coffee shops around. I heard them Google men drink so much coffee, I declare, I think they might drown. Gentrification is here. Oh, one thing I know, you can't stand pat.
I declare you gotta step it up and go.
And that was... Okay, go ahead, Diego.
Yep. Hello.
It's still low. No, wait. Try again.
Hello. Yep. Okay.
Oh, that's because I'm using the wrong one. Sorry. We're going to go to mic three. There you go.
Hello. Hey.
There you go. Perfect. All right. Sorry for to our listeners for the technical difficulties here with the mic. We're now back up to speed, full volume, whatever you want to call it. And welcome back to Socialist Radio, talking music from a socialist, working class, and socialist perspective. And we're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WMFO 91.5 FM. And if you're in the vicinity of Tufts or Medford, Somerville, parts of Greater Boston, out on Route 2, Concord even, you might catch our signal on air, over the air. If you're having some trouble with that, just go to computer. You know, just go to your computer, go to WMFO.org, click on Socialist. Actually, right now, we have our old name, Socialist Alternative Radio. But click on that. Just click on Socialist. It's the only one there, the only socialist show. And you can catch our last show, hopefully archived. So today we're going to be talking about, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Jeff.
Diego.
And today we're going to be talking about International Women's Day and the struggle against oppression. Focusing that on an article I got from the Committee for Workers International, socialistworld.net website, and I think an article written by Claire Doyle, if I'm not mistaken. And then we have talk about Rosa Luxemburg a little bit. We're going to get into the coronavirus and what that means from kind of a working class perspective.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
I'm sick and tired of rhetoric.
Hey, just go self quarantine. Lose your job, you know, infect your family. Let's see what else. What else is out there for working class people?
Well, now they say if we travel, like I work in a hospital.
Yeah,
I have to be out for 2 weeks when I get back to come back to work.
Do they pay? Do they pay you for those 2 weeks?
Know. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, we gotta find out. There's
so
little
this
details.
Year I was planning. There goes my plans to go to you know where.
The island. The capitalist devil is in the details. Yeah, we don't really have enough money.
No cases in Cuba, by the way.
That's good. That's really good. I saw a map.
Cuban doctors went to China. Going to China.
I saw a map where a lot of cases were in the southern hemisphere. There were less cases. It seemed. With the exception of maybe India.
Except Guatemala, I think there was a few cases.
Oh, really?
Very few.
Know if it has to do with the weather. Like some guy on the on Washington Week or one of those lame news stories.
But we also have
corporate
dengue,
media.
Wait, hold on.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say really quick. This one guy said today, some so-called scientist or government hack that Trump hired, I don't know which or both, was like, it should. This is the first time I've heard this. That's why I want to make sure I say it. It's supposed to stop. It's supposed to slow down at the end of April. He didn't explain why. So I'm wondering, have you heard anything about this is related to weather, like the normal flu is? Like it goes down in the summertime and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
It is related.
Hotter places, it's probably less.
Yeah, so that's what I'm wondering about. Yeah. You think so?
I think that's what it is. Yeah. I mean,
and that's because why people are outdoor, they're not inside as much.
They're getting more sun. What's that? The B
vitamin
or
D.
A?
D. Yeah.
D. Okay, so if you get more sun, that's like me. Yeah. A lot of people say, why are you so red? Because I haven't gotten a lot of sun because of my eyes.
Yeah.
But now that I had the cataract surgery, I can actually go out with the sun without the sun bothering me.
Wow, yeah.
So I'm going to be getting a lot of more vitamin D.
Yeah. I need a lot of vitamin D.
Yeah. The thing is, down in Central America, it's more of like the mosquitoes, the dengue. You got to watch out for, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about all the ways that you can die.
Even this summer here, we had
Well, 2 years ago, it was West Nile, and they're still around this year, but then there was another one, wasn't there?
There was another one. That's why I stopped going to the service center with the rats, because I told people, listen, I had like a couple of days of like high fever, and I took care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Flushed it out of my system, sweated it out.
Last summer?
So last summer. Yeah. And I said, guys, you got to watch out because these you're next to the Jamaica Plain Pond.
Mm-hmm.
These mosquitoes are going in. They're sucking the blood from the rats, which you're infested with.
Uh-huh.
And they're transmitting it to us.
Right.
So watch out.
Yeah.
You know?
No, there's a lot of ways.
That's the reason why I stopped going to that area, because that's where all the rats are.
Yeah. There's so many
just
ways.
Logic,
there's
so
many ways to die. And I don't say that to make fun of it or light of it. I think it's really unfair to humans. It's really, really sad, actually, and I don't like it. And I think that we can lessen the ways to die in a lot of ways, but not under capitalism. It's really hard because profits first, you know? Like, even the way this started, it's like one little company at first was the only one for about the first 2 weeks working on a vaccine in the United States. It was actually in Massachusetts.
Biogen?
No, I don't think it was. It might have been, but I think it was something.
Nine people got infected.
I think it was
Biogen.
They had a conference, but no, that wasn't from that. No, there was like one little venture capitalist startup stupidity thing happening in like somewhere near Norwood. I forget the name of the company working on a vaccine. And that just struck me as so completely idiotic and so completely capitalist at the same time that they're going to leave it to the market, the wonders of capitalism, which is so incredibly inefficient when you think about it.
Sometimes I wonder, did the market create this for the vaccine in the first place? The hysteria? More people die of the flu, but nobody speaks about it.
Yeah, that's something that's going around. I don't know if I believe that reasoning, because the problem with this one is there's no vaccine for it. Whereas the regular flu, they're able to develop vaccines for it. However, if they're not perfect. Mm. Also, with this one, there's a lot they don't know about it, like how you get infected exactly. I mean, they're learning more. But I don't know. I understand what you're saying. A lot more people. It's definitely so far a lot more people died from the flu.
Two superpowers.
But the potential of this, of this going to worse than the flu is there. You know, being much worse than the flu.
Well, you got this government saying that's China's fault. It's a little whatever experiment.
Well, I think China. China's a capitalist. China's a capitalist country. It's a state capitalist country, and there's a big problem in China with regulation of basic capitalist industry and commerce, or whatever you want to call it. That's a nice word for, you know, selling crap to people. So the original theory I heard, which may or may not be true, was, you know, remember there was this one market that they identified as ground zero before. I don't know if that's still the case. And they said this was a very kind of unregulated place with a lot of bad hygiene, bad practices. and it might have jumped from an animal, a dead animal or something, to a person. I believe that completely. China's not a clean place in a lot of places. Neither is the United States in a lot of places. You know, it's capitalism, you know. And so someone could say, are you blaming this virus on capitalism? Well, yes and no. I mean, there's viruses that predate capitalism, but it's all about what kind of behavior, what kind of economic system you have that might exacerbate that, might make it worse.
How come Cuba's not affected? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah.
Not a lot of traveling?
Oh, that's really good. I just put a little bit of caution on that.
Of health care?
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. This is exposing the weaknesses. We're not the only ones talking about this part. A lot of people, this is exposing the weaknesses in capitalist health care really hugely in the United States and elsewhere. But I wouldn't go too far with the Cuba thing because they are introducing elements of the market of capitalism into their economy, probably leaving themselves open to that. And you know they like tourism there too, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to be immune forever. But I hope so. I mean, but I just don't think that's going to be the case. But I think that because they do have, even though they do have a bit of a planned economy still, even though it's bureaucratized, they could move faster to do things, and not worry about profits every step of the way. Whereas here, like this whole thing about the vaccine, at first you'd have to pay for it. If you can't pay for it, too bad. Now they're starting to talk about, well, maybe it'll be free. You know, I was like, what the heck are these? The minute in a socialist government, a workers' government, the first thing you do is just say, this is a war. This is a war. The virus has attacked the population. It's a war against it now. We're gonna pool everything together and like they did with polio and other things, even under capitalism, at certain times they've managed to get their act together, pool resources, and not try to make a profit out of it. Now, there's been so many years of neoliberalism, as they call it in academia, meaning mining money, rules all, that they're really pushing for using wait a minute, this should be a government thing, and all these governments together pooling resources to cure this, you know, as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So you had some guy today on the TV in one of those capitalist media outlets, one of those corporate media outlets, talking about definitely there won't be a cure, there won't be a vaccine for a year and a half out, you know, it'll take a year and a half. No, that's just not factually correct. It could happen tomorrow if you put enough resources into it. Tomorrow, I don't mean tomorrow literally, but you know, it could happen very much quicker than that. Yeah. If you pool resources over international borders, forget about private enterprise and making a profit off of this, and that would really bring about a vaccine very, very quickly. I mean, perhaps not. But also, I mean, think about the AIDS virus. They've made a lot of advances in treatment, right? But they still don't have a basic cure yet. Can you imagine? It's been how many years out now? So anyway,
I still think the cure exists because there's that basketball player still living.
For what? Well, it's not a cure. It's the way the treatment is. They can with some of the medications now with AIDS, they can get the virus to be basically undetectable. But still, they're worried that if it's happened, that it still can come back. So that's what they're really, really, that's the problem with that right now. They don't have a vaccine. They also don't have a preventative vaccine that I'm aware of. There's been testing of it, and I guess it didn't work out or something. That's the latest information I have.
The other one that's underscored because of capitalism is they're screening everybody coming in, either airplanes, what mm-hmm, have you. Mm-hmm. What about the shipping, the imports and stuff
right.
from China?
No idea. No
they
idea.
Say don't. No, point. they don't get the workers and these freights, whatever, yeah. That bring the products, don't get screened.
Yeah. So a lot of our listeners probably have Netflix, and I don't know, Netflix is a hit or miss game for me, but you know, in terms of what product they put up there, what content they put up there, but they did have this old 90s movie about I forget what it was called.
Outbreak
with Dustin Hoffman.
Is that with the monkey?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then wipe out the soldiers there.
That was
just
like
get rid of it. Boom.
That was a conspiracy. That was a conspiracy theory movie, which I don't totally discount conspiracy theories simply because of if you look up the Tuskegee experiments or the experiments with LSD the CIA did and all that, I wouldn't totally discount the possibilities of things like that happening. But this was a little. You know, it's basically based on a fictional conspiracy theory. But what was factual about it was the interesting way they talked about how and it horrific way that it can spread. Yeah, just
airborne.
Yeah, yeah, and random. Yeah. Well, it wasn't airborne in this case.
I did a report on that. We were on watching that movie in 94, I remember, for science.
Yeah.
And I made a report on that.
Yeah, good.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, for that part of the movie, it was very interesting, I thought. And, you know, I just hope we're not in a situation like that because, you know, speaking of politics, and I'm not talking about the elections here, although that's part of politics, but in terms of like working class politics, like being out organizing and stuff, the coronavirus, in addition to being just horrible on a, you know, level of people dying and human sickness and illness and all that, it also is going to, and I think already has, probably, if you look at it objectively, cut into people being able to organize well, you know, for collective action, to have meetings. I'm sure people are thinking twice about going to big meetings now, like they are thinking about going to big entertainment things.
Or Mayday. Now that we have Mayday right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could affect May 1st. Yeah. So I don't know. It's tricky. It depends on how things seem to be going at the time. And some people are not, you know, opting out of everything, which I think is good. But where do you get the balance between, you know, shutting yourself up when you know if you don't need to, or opting out of things? It's tricky. I hope that you know, like everyone else, that it just about everyone else, that the barriers that Callison has put up to finding a cure can be overcome, maybe by some other country or something, you know, and they get a vaccine quickly. And that people take this stuff seriously and all that. I just find the whole hand-washing thing, very important. I'm telling my kids about that and all that, but it's not nearly enough, obviously. You know, you need to find a vaccine.
Down or no schools closed
it's
down.
Tricky. Some schools are closing down. Most aren't. I work at Harvard University, which is technically a school. It's really a big corporation. But anyway, they're little by in fits and starts coming towards, I think, some sort of closure, but it hasn't happened yet. They've set up certain rules about travel, certain rules about large meetings, you know. I think it's no meetings over 100 or something like that. I don't want to quote the regulations because I don't have them memorized. And start thinking about working at home, working from home, which, of course, not everyone can do. I don't think I can do it from what I can tell. It wouldn't be as good if I did work at home, in terms of quality of work. Not that they care about that much, but you know. But we promised ourselves we would not talk off air, that we wouldn't talk all day about the coronavirus.
Yeah, we had enough.
Because the corporate media, that's all they talk about, and it's understandable that it's even for the corporate media, it's understandable they give it attention. But it would be better if the attention had some more substance to it, you know, and more critical thinking than it does. I heard one person on National Propaganda Radio today really grilling a scientist in a kind of ignorant way, but kind of it was refreshing a little bit to see them take on the authority or whatever. I'm just going to try to take this call for a second.
Yeah.
WMFO, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to let you know I can't get you over the internet.
Well, I'm very sorry about that. When we walked in to do our show, someone told us that our internet, we put out on the internet, it's a program called Rivendell, and it's automated. That's not working, so it might have something to do with that. So very, very sorry about that. I would just check back periodically.
I'll show every week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We'll be on for two more weeks.
Yeah,
so
just check back periodically if you can. Sorry about that.
Will the archive be available?
Yeah,
probably not today. If you're having trouble getting it, but I would try it. You go to the web address wmfo.org. Go to schedules, click on Socialist Alternative Radio, and you should have the show from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I hope.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. It does. It does. It goes back 2 weeks.
May not be up there, but I mean, because they take it off every 2 weeks. But,
right, exactly. It's a 2 week limit, so, unfortunately.
Will the show be available, do you think?
Yeah.
We can't promise that. Sorry.
No,
Diego.
I've heard the show myself.
No, I'm saying, but this, she's talking about this show. Will that be available in 2 weeks? We can't promise it because of the glitches that are happening. Sorry about that. The people that do the tech stuff here have been informed about it, but I can't. It's a Sunday, and I can't just promise it'll be fixed.
it looks like an interesting conversation from what you put up on the board.
Well, we just wasted a lot of our time talking about coronavirus. Not a waste, but we're getting back to what it says up on the board now. But thanks for trying to listen.
Good show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. As you probably heard, if you were listening to that caller, they could not get our show through our website, which is something we announce all the time.
Yeah.
Go to WFO.org if you can't get us over the air.
Or if you can, pick it up on 91.5 FM.
If you're around the area.
Yeah.
Signal's very weak. I mean, this station emanates from Tufts University, as most of our listeners know. Sometimes we talk about we're Tufts Educational Radio. And unfortunately, the signals college radio stations tend to have weaker signals, and Tufts is no exception. And we go out to parts of Medford and Somerville, parts of the places near there, that around there. I've literally heard the show on Route 2 and out as far out as Lexington and Concord. But I'm no expert on radio waves. I should be. I've been on the radio a lot in the past. But,
well, now with all these new constructions.
I don't know where. Yeah, I don't know if that affects it.
I leave the Galleria Mall, I can hear it. Then I go inside the Galleria Mall, it goes.
Nice.
It just goes.
Oh, that's
nice. But
you
got to be outside by the canal.
Yeah, but that's East Cambridge. That's great. You can hear it over there at all.
But it's an iffy play, depending on where you're positioned.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say too. That you just, I also have had very bad luck sometimes with the signal.
Even with my cell phone, I can be
live in
one street and then get single. In the other street, I got nothing.
There's a lot of weird. Good programming on this station, and sometimes I'll just turn it on and I will get nothing where I should. Then another day, time I'll be there, near Harvard Square or something, and I'll get something. It's really weird. For a while, there was a pirate radio station, I think, bleeding into this over the airwaves here, but that didn't last that long, and that's not usually the problem. Anyway, enough about radio technique, technological things that we don't quite understand fully, and some things we understand a little bit better, and we want to talk about International Women's Day, because today is International Women's Day, and this is a holiday rooted in the socialist movement, and a lot of the early feminists were socialists, and a lot of feminists still are socialists, of course, or it's a decent number. So it's really important to talk about this, and we tried to compare notes with people, and we're not seeing this mentioned in the corporate media at all. Hopefully, maybe that will change or something, but right now it's just kind of being ignored.
Except on RT today, I seen an interesting piece about
is that corporate
Soviet
media?
Women.
I'm not sure that's corporate media.
Oh, it's Russia today.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know
who pays for it.
Tipping their hats to the women in the Soviets, you know, that were...
Oh, really? Good, good. Well, by the way, speaking of corporate media versus non-corporate media...
Especially in World War II when they were fighting, a lot of the women had a big part in the fight against Nazi
aggression. Totally. Some of the best snipers were women.
And because it's Russia, they're going to celebrate that.
Well, I don't know. Putin's trying to turn the whole country, the Putin regime, trying to get them away from any positive commemoration of the Russian Revolution, which was very positive before Stalinism took it over. But even after Stalinism took it over, there were, you know, you can't condemn every, like Indonesia.
England,
some parts,
I think,
of that
is still under the monarchy, isn't it?
Well,
the queen can
what
pull
this means
the parliament
here, yeah,
any
but what
day.
This means here in Tudor feudalism is feudal class relations in the sense of like big landowners that would kind of exploit the heck out of workers with no regulation and in a way that hasn't changed maybe since you know,
certain
200, 300
still
years.
Has a caste system.
There you go, that kind of thing, exactly. So, So anyway, so the origins of International Women's Day are interesting because it's a socialist holiday in a way, although it's been taken up by more than socialists, which is good. The origin of a special day to celebrate and strengthen the struggles of women internationally goes back to the days of heroic strikes and demonstrations by women garment workers in New York City in the late 19th century. They demanded an end to horrific work conditions, poverty pay, and child labor. And not quoting from the article, but just to say, remember that some of the first capitalist factories, big enterprises, beginning of corporations, were in the textile industry in the United States.
England.
And the main labor in the, even in England, right, started with textile. A lot of capitalism started with textile, meaning wool, production of wool into
England's
clothing.
England's father was part of that.
Yeah.
the wool, the mills.
Yep. So the in the United States, even before the Civil War, and the Civil War is a kind of a marker for development of capitalism. 1866 onward, capitalism was in full, quick development, because slavery was gone, it was defeated. When slavery was around, there was still this pull of a slave system, basically, in the South, and the way that was, sort of part capitalist and connected to capitalism, especially in the North, it was still a big factor preventing the United States from full capitalist development. And I'm not saying capitalist development is necessarily positive, but compared to slavery, it is, in a way. And it's positive, if you want to use that word, in a way, in terms of what it can produce compared to feudal systems or slave systems. But again, that's a loaded term to say better or positive or to imply that with the word development. But what I'm trying to say is just basically slavery held back the development of capitalism. Let's just put it as neutrally as possible. And after slavery was defeated in the war, boom, capitalism really shot up. But even before that, here's the point, even as early as 1845, 1850, whatever, if I have my chronology correct, you do have some of the first capitalist factories starting in different places, and even before that, but you're really starting to get going around right here in Massachusetts, where we're doing the show from, around the Merrimack River Valley in places like Lawrence, Lowell, around Boston and so on. And it was tended to be textiles, and the main workers, here's the main point, were young women. Young women, they would get to leave the farms out of necessity, or enticing them with, you get pay, actually, and you get a decent place to stay. And at first they tried to make the conditions okay, but they, of course, right away that went out the window, and it became exploitation. And so in certain industries, like the garment industry,
and your days were
like,
real long.
Like today, you have an emphasis on exploiting women in certain industries, including the garment industry. So back in the 19th century, 1800s, even mid-1800s, early 1800s, early-ish, you had women being exploited in these big textile mills, including in New York. And they fought back. They went on strike. They took job actions, and they were attacked by the police. And they organized unions, and the unions were considered illegal, or they were tried to smash them. And one highlight of this is women took to the streets of New York City on March 8th in 1908. So this is a lot further along than what I was talking about, but still a lot of more women being exploited in the garment industry. And they were demanding better pay, and as you mentioned, shorter hours, and the right to vote. Women didn't have the right to vote until, 1920 or 21 here in the United
20s,
States.
The 20s, yep.
Which is really insane when you think about it. And quoting from this article again, it was in 1910 that an international socialist conference in Copenhagen, Denmark was held, attended by over 100 women from 17 countries, all socialist activists and leaders, and they unanimously passed a motion that established International Women's Day as an annual event, and they said it was March 8th. Indeed, the mighty Russian Revolution in February 1917 was ignited by a strike and demonstrations of tens of thousands of women textile workers in Petrograd, Russia, celebrating International Women's Day and demanding bread and peace and down with the Tsar. So that was really cemented the holiday as international and as significant. Now, is it still celebrated that way today? Well, I don't know if International Women's Day per se is invoked, but sometimes it is in struggles. But the role of women in struggles based on their history within International Women's Day is certainly there. So anyway, after the victorious overthrow of capitalism on October 25th in 1917 in Russia, decrees were passed by the Congress of Soviets, and by the way, at this point in time, there's still real workers' councils of tens of thousands of workers, Soviets, they're called workers' councils, promising to transform the lives of working women. So they had equal pay for equal work was established, civil marriage and divorce, free abortion on demand, the first country in the world to have free abortion or to have abortion rights was Russia. They also decreed an end to the suppression of homosexuality. The door was opened into a new life for working women, and as a poster of the time described it, quote, an end to kitchen slavery. They even experimented, and this is not quoting from the article, but just from, things I've researched and other people have, obviously. They've early in the Russian Revolution, before Stalin took over, and especially before the Civil War really kicked in, which was very soon after the revolution, but you still had some a period of time before that fully crippled efforts to create sort of communal living situations, not in the sense of like hippy-dippy communes, but instead just like, okay, in this area, in a rural area or in a suburb or a city or whatever, we're going to try these things, all living together. And a lot of it was centered on women, because women do so much unpaid labor under capitalism, and they were transitioning to socialism. So, well, we don't, let's experiment with everyone eating together and cooking together, you know, so men and women equally share that collectively, and it gets rotated, the task get rotated around. Collective child care, so women could work and children could still be taken care of, right? Instead of women doing all the child care, right? Individually. Collective laundries. So women, you know, at that time, you know, had been forced to do laundry primarily, you know, not men, obviously, at that time. The consciousness was very backward. So they switched that to, hey, communal, collective laundries, you know, not just individual women having to do that for a family unit of some sort. So each thing in life, when you think of it, that is unpaid, and still to this day often unpaid labor by women, was collectivized, was made communal. I don't know about cleaning. I hope they included that one. I haven't read that one per se. but it was really a huge advance at the time, really ahead of its time in some ways. But as the article explains, as workers' democracy in the Soviet Union faded with the rise of Stalin and the isolation of the revolution, the door slammed shut on women's liberation from domestic slavery. Double and even triple oppression of women was renewed, even encouraged under Stalinism. And in modern-day Russia, President Putin has recently even annulled laws protecting women from domestic abuse. Putin's a real tool of capitalism, by the way. On March 8th, he will utter platitudes about how much women deserve traditional gifts of flowers and chocolates on International Women's Day, but then go back to business as usual. Now, in the underdeveloped world, or the neocolonial world, there is more of a tradition of celebrating International Women's Day in Asia and in Latin America. I don't know if you saw this in Cuba or El Salvador, but...
Oh, in Cuba, it's kind of the same system that you said, you know, everybody just... I know when I was growing up...
No, I mean on the celebration of International Women's Day. Did that...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Per se, you ever witnessed?
That's just as... It's that's big. Up there with May Day.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
In Cuba.
Good.
And in El Salvador, I like to say also my grandfather and grandmother always rotated the duties.
Yeah.
So, not just him going to the cows, tend to the cows, tend to the corn, you know, agrarian life.
Right.
He would do laundry too, and back and forth, and they'll fight back and forth. You know, they always had those, you know, I did it last week, damn it, now it's your turn, you know?
Yeah. The idea of, like, for example...
And everybody pulls together, so it's like a tribal society in a way, like, you know, we're all pulling weight, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the cousins, all my, you know...
Yep.
My uncle, my... Everybody.
Yep. Going back to...
You have to.
Yeah. Going back to equal pay for equal work, we still don't have that, even in the richest country in the world, by capitalist measures, the United States. And so people are... obviously still questioning that, but a lot of the questioning now, since there is less of a socialist movement and so on, although it's growing again, there's less critique at a systematic level. So people can't quite figure out, we passed a law saying there must be equal pay for equal work and women still don't have it. And some people would say it's just residual sexism. And I'd say that's partially it, right? I mean, the big bosses in the United States are certainly... A lot of them are sexist. Look at Trump or whatever. But also, Harvey Weinstein and all that. But also, there are a certain number of women CEOs and companies that say, yeah, we have a rule, equal pay for equal work, and it still doesn't exist, right? By objective measurement. Now, why is that? One theory, which I think is true, I don't know if that's not the whole picture, but I think it's really true, is that, you know, capitalism is relentless, you know, in its profit mongering and profit seeking. And so when they're exploiting workers, they want workers, basically, if they can get away with it, to be available 24/7, right? Imagine if you're a woman and God forbid you take time off to raise a family, to have children, You know, you know, if you're pregnant, you're not. People, pregnant women still work, unfortunately, but you know, a lot are, you know, have to take time off and want to take time off, which is good. And then you lose that pay. And now with childcare, here's the other part of the equation. Not just when you're pregnant, you're losing pay, you're losing career advancement under capitalism, meaning dog eat dog world, you know. I can't crush my fellow worker.
Your paper chase, your paper chase right. capacity is not as
exactly.
You know.
The paper chase is halted for the best reasons in the world, but not under capitalism. And I mean, capitalism wants the family unit and children and all that to exploit in the future, but they also don't want to pay for it. And dog, you know, let people die as long as a certain number survive. That's capitalism's de facto position, whether it's articulated or not. And so then you have women who, okay, I've missed 8 months or 9 months or 12 or 15 because of pregnancy, and gee, I want to nurse my child a little bit, you know. But I'm going to get back in the game, and I'm going to, you know, start, you know, the competition for advancement again, you know, and all that. And I'm not blaming those women. I'm just saying that's capitalism, right? So then, wait a minute. You look with if the woman has a partner, or a single woman, especially, obviously, looks and says, wait a minute. If I put my kid in childcare, it costs literally tens of thousands of dollars per year now. Literally, I mean, we're still paying in my family for childcare we did years ago, because we had to rack up debt to pay for it. It was so expensive. So what do you do then? Well, if you're lucky, you've got relatives you can leave your kid with if they're into that, right? If the relatives will do it.
How was it when you were growing up?
And if you
up?
Don't. Relatives, grandmother. It right. was it wasn't as expensive.
I think that was, so that I think, was I think my thing too.
I think my parents could have afforded it barely back then. But this would be the 60s and 70s. But my grandmother just did it. My grandmother was a Polish immigrant.
Me too. And my she grandmother just did raised it. Me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my mother went to work.
Yeah, my mother worked.
My grandmother was the one I'd get home from school or whatever, and food would be ready.
Yeah.
You know, she took care of me. She picked me up.
Yeah, my mother worked full-time at a time when not a lot of women still weren't doing that. You know, the 50s, 60s picture of women in the house, that was never
and
our
situation. And my grandma went
never
back
our situation.
Because her visa expired at the time, and she got tossed right back to El Salvador, but she didn't care. She's like, I hate America.
But what happened to you then?
Well, I had a nanny.
Were you old enough to?
No. It was a African American lady. I'll never forget her, Mrs. I forgot her name, Jackson or something like that, down in Texas. And the best cook I ever, you know.
Yeah.
She took care of me along with others. All the Salvadorian women in where I was growing up would just drop off their kids, and they would pay her, you know, literally almost nothing, but.
Yeah,
she didn't mind taking care of these kids, you know, us.
Daycare, like, if as the word for child care, as this term for child care, started to get, like, to become a business when I was a kid. But it was still very not much. It was still a lot of informal child care. But then as more and more women were forced to go to work because one salary couldn't cut it anymore, if this is for married people that are married, that now it's become a big business, obviously, as we know, and it's just so expensive, it's ridiculous.
And her son was on a wheelchair, but there was a reason for that. He was a Black Panther, and he had police brutality, shot.
Wow.
So I'll never forget him. He used to like hanging out with him all the time because he would just tell me, and he knew a lot of Spanish. You know?
Oh, really? Good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He would tell me things that I'm like about this country, you know.
He talked about politics too.
Oh, big time! He was an ex Black Panther,
Good for him. Yeah. Yeah. So
in a wheelchair. I mean, that's politicized people, don't you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. The lost my train of thought there. Equal pay for equal work. So you got the pregnancy per se and time around that, but then you have the child care you can't afford. So a lot of women still have to stay home somehow and take care of the kid or work part-time. So you're losing income. You're losing, this pay is still somewhat based on seniority, even in a formal sense. They're trying to get rid of seniority as a contractual thing. But, the longer you've been there, the more you tend to get paid through increments of pay increase, if it even happens, right, through, like, raises, even in non-union places. And so you start to lose ground that way. You haven't got the promotion to, supervisor, cop, for the capitalists this year. Someone else got it, et cetera, et cetera. And then men that are there who don't have to take time off, although some do, you know, but most don't. They're gonna just go up the ladder more or be there longer. You know, they're not gonna be out of work. It's completely unfair. There's institutional, material, factual, scientific reasons why women get paid less under capitalism, and that has to be eliminated. And the way to eliminate that, you need fully funded childcare. You know, it should be free, just like healthcare should be free, obviously. It gets tossed around as an idea a little bit, but it was much more an idea back, I remember back in the early 80s and late 70s, much, much more serious of an idea, and they actually put it into place in some places. Like, in my brother worked for the state of New York, as did his wife. And they, the agitation around that issue, the political pressure from the women's movement in the 60s and 70s resulted in state workers having very highly subsidized childcare, and like literally like pay like $5 or something a day or a week or something. It was like almost free. And but there for only for state workers. Club, and my nephew went through, you know, that's what was his childcare.
And when I started getting into like your son's age, like 10, 11-ish or whatever, I started doing a lot of the Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah.
Stay out of trouble. Yeah. Kind of,
my son's 14 now, but I hear 14. What you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean. You get a certain age where you're going towards that adolescence, but I'm talking about like 10, 9-year-old, 9, 8-year-old. I'm getting, they had a lot of Boys and Girls Club. That was another factor instead of just being in one, you know.
Well, as far as I know, you got to pay for that stuff now, like summer camps and all that too.
Back then it was subsidized.
I'm not talking about, yeah.
Like my mother didn't pay a dime. Okay. She just, it was like a program, signed up. Oh, yeah.
There's some subsidized summer camps.
They took us camping.
There's some subsidized summer camps and some subsidized daycare here and there. It's not uniform. And the problem often with that kind of stuff is they set the bar so low that you have to be really, really poor to get into it. So it's good there's something there, but it leaves out a lot of people that are still living paycheck to paycheck. Yeah. You know, that's true with a lot of stuff. So so socialism is about, you know, getting at the, partially about, I mean, there's a moral component to it. We want everyone to be free and live decent lives, but we realize the main impediment to that is the economic system of capitalism. So getting rid of capitalism and moving forward to democratic socialism in the real sense, not what, I don't mean to use the term that like Bernie Sanders is labeled with or whatever. I mean in terms of real bringing democracy to the economy, that the corporations are publicly owned and probably reconfigured into things that don't look like corporations, you know, and workers have rights and it's international scale. It's not just country by country or town by town or something or city by city. So bring democracy to the economy on a world scale so you can democratically plan what's to be produced and how it's to be distributed for human need and not for profit. I mean, that's the essence of socialism. So you bring that over to the condition women still are under capitalism, and especially, well, not especially necessarily, but also in the underdeveloped world, you know, it's the solution is not, unfortunately, not just in protest, random protest or unfocused talk about making it all like a problem of mass psychology. You know, men are sexist, that's why women are oppressed. Well, there's an element of that, certainly. But where does sexism itself come from? Where does those backward ideas come from in men's heads? Are they, or most men's, or a certain number of men, or whatever?
Same with racism.
Exactly. Does that come from nowhere?
Or did it, or did, racism.
Exactly, by Malcolm X. Did it have... Does it have a material basis, a scientific basis, a basis of any exploitation? So anyway, so it used to be traditional on March 8th. This is in the neocolonial world again. This article goes into a little bit. I want to just mention a few things because I never heard of some of these things. So let's see. We'll do a little quiz here, see if you heard of them. It used to be traditional on March 8th, International Women's Day, to honor the memory of the great socialist fighters of the past, prominent amongst them Eleanor Marx, Rosa Luxemburg, and Clara Zetkin. We've both heard of all those,
Rosa.
Right?
I heard of Rosa.
Okay. Eleanor Marx, you've heard of. Marx's daughter, right? She fought for women's rights.
Okay, yep.
Yep. And was a Marxist. Clara Zetkin also, actually, I'm a little weak on Clara Zetkin. I want to say she's...
Never heard of her.
...was German, but I think she was maybe Russian, and I apologize. I used to know who she was. In Africa and Asia, great pioneer fighters for oppressed and women's rights are also neglected. you know, neglected in the official histories of that the educational system under capitalism or the corporate media under capitalism puts forward. So these are definitely some people I never heard of. In the early 1920s, Funmilayo Ransome Kuti in Nigeria, the last name is Ransome hyphen Kuti, in Nigeria founded a number of organizations and mobilized local market women for picnics, quote-unquote, and festivals, courting resistance not only against British colonialism, but also against local traditional figureheads who enforced their rule and oppression, including the oppression of women. In Tanganyika, is that even a country? That I'm not aware of. I'm unaware of this country. You ever heard of Tanganyika? Maybe it's a part of a larger country now. Yeah. Tanganyika. It sounds like Africa. In the 1950s, Bibi Titi Mohamed was a courageous leader of women in the fight against colonial rule. She adopted the methods of the Bolshevik women in Central Asia, using women's cultural and economic networks to exchange information, organize rallies, sell party membership cards, and raise funds for TANU's, T-A-N-U's, fight for freedom. So I'm going to have to learn more about that that struggle in TANU, T-A-N-U. It's an acronym, or what do you call that when you put something in capitals when each letter stands for a part of a word? Anyway, acronym, I guess.
Acronym, yeah.
I'm not sure that's right. But anyway, in Pakistan, another country with proud traditions of struggle, supporters of the Committee for Workers International, and the author of this article, Claire Doyle, is a leader of the Committee for Workers International, have always celebrated the 8th of March, the International Women's Day, often with colorful and lively demonstrations. This is in Pakistan, CWI supporters there. This year, with the hope of attracting young women to the struggle for socialism, CWI members in Pakistan are holding a series of special seminars on the significance of International Women's Day. And hundreds of thousands of women have been at the core of the mass movement in India against the hated Civic Amendment Act. Since the end of last year, these protests have been happening, and they haven't been budging even when faced with thuggery and violence from the police and reactionary groups, or goons, she says, actually. But the most recent events in Delhi have been followed by the breaking up of protests countrywide, leave little or no chance this March 8th will be celebrating women's proud fighting traditions because of this repression. India could be like a whole show right now, and I can't say I understand what's going on there fully. I know, of course, that there's the reactionary conservative government in there under Modi. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. But what the latest protests and so on are, like, there was like one of the biggest strikes in history, if not the biggest strike in history, within the last 6 months, I think, in India.
Well, they got the most people in history.
Yeah.
They got a lot of people.
Well, second to China, yeah. The political atmosphere in Sri Lanka also makes any sizable public celebrations for International Women's Day impossible. But as members of the United Socialist Party, again, part of the CWI, have pointed out, there is no lack of reasons to fight against the super-exploitation of women's labor in tea plantations, in garment factories of the free trade zones in Sri Lanka, and abroad as slave labor in the houses of rich Middle Eastern families. Women's labor brings in the bulk of the country's export earnings. Wow. Did you hear that? That's interesting. That's an interesting angle I haven't thought of. How many countries where people are forced to migrate, is it mainly women making it through to the other countries and then sending back wages? It's probably a lot, right?
Oh, that used to happen. Wow. My mother would work and send back wages.
Yeah, but I think I think of, like, for example, migration from Mexico, I think of men to a certain extent. Of course, women also, but, like, the fact that it might be more women actually making it over and making the money is something to think about. So let's see. Women's labor brings in the bulk of the country's export earnings, and yet they have less than a couple of dollars a day to survive on. This is, again, Sri Lankan women, but there's probably other examples, obviously. In Latin America, and if you want to, you know, have anything to add to this, please do. In Latin America, March 8th is seen as a day to commemorate all those women who have lost their lives at the hands of partners as well as the state. In Chile, there have been horrific murders of women activists like Daniela Carrasco and Macarena Valdez? Did you ever hear of you?
Valdez?
Macarena Valdez? I haven't heard of them per se.
What about Frida?
No, this is Chile. Chile, there have been, this is recent too, there have been horrific murders of women activists like Daniela Carrasco and Macarena Valdez. So I'd have to look those up. But the class fighters of Socialismo Revolucionario, that's CWI in Chile, report that some feminist groups are raising the idea that demonstrations on International Women's Day should not include men. This illustrates the danger of identity politics dividing women fighters from their comrades in arms, who recently joined together, meaning men and women, in recent battles to oust the Piñera regime in Chile. In Argentina, reflecting the horrors of past dictatorships, women played a big role in opposing the military. When they hold protests under the aegis of Ni Uno Menos, not one less, they are thinking not only of the inaction of the authorities in tackling murders of women in the home, domestic violence, in other words, but also the numerous victims of army and police violence. The Non Una Di Meno website speaks of plans in Italy for demonstrations on March 8th, the Sunday. I wonder, see, we were talking earlier about coronavirus affecting that. I bet that's affected now. It might not happen. I don't know. And strike action on Monday, 9th of March. But the authorities, oh, here we go. I'm sorry. This is in the article. But the authorities have told them that holding the demonstration on the street is prohibited because of the coronavirus. I didn't know that was there. Sorry. They say they will not be cowed, just as workers in France do, as their strike struggles continue. And then in Europe, women's fights in Europe, this just, we're talking about recent now, not just historical. Gauche révolutionnaire, meaning left revolutionary. The CWI's French section is involved in the mass movement against pension reform, quote-unquote, reformers in quotes, you know, the attacks on pensions by the Macron government in France that had all those big rallies and protests recently and strike action. In the paper of Gauche Révolutionnaire, which is called Égalité, meaning equality, they explain just why women are angry and fully involved in the protests. Among other attacks, Macron, and he's the, what is he, prime minister or president of France, I forget which one, and Macron's scheme would penalize women for breaks in their career to have children. Women are also widely involved in the Gilets Jaunes movement that has continued for more than a year, camped out at roundabouts, meaning that means the traffic circles, and marching on the regular Sunday demonstrations. In Germany and Austria, strikes involving women have taken place recently in the health and social services. One in Austria is a struggle for a 35-hour work week. It includes care workers of all kinds, writes a CWI member in Vienna, Austria. Those looking after kids in schools, those in elder care for the disabled, social workers working with asylum seekers. It's a predominantly female workforce, but men and women strike together, of course. Now, remember we were talking about child care, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in other shows, we've also brought up, like in the same breath, which I think is good, elder care, right? Remember back in the day, you know, again, we'll look at the post-war upswing as a comparison, 60s and 70s. Elder care was institutionalized in subsidized nursing homes. Highly regulated and affordable. Most people had Blue Cross and Blue Shield as a form of health insurance. You didn't have HMOs yet. You didn't have all this other stuff that you have now. Now, that was a tenuous balance. I'm not sure it existed everywhere in the United States, but you had between regulated health insurance through Blue Cross and Blue Shield at a relatively low cost, and the often city-owned or state-owned nursing homes. Elder care was not a problem. I don't remember hearing that as a problem when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, it's like this thing that just destroys families, throws them into bankruptcy as part of all the bankruptcies related to the lack of free health care in the United States. Elder care, like child care, is now incredibly expensive and a big business, a big industry.